Paddy Pigskin with Gary Somerville in association with DraftKings.
Hello and welcome back to Paddy Pigskin with Gary Somerville. It's episode 37 and I've got Barry and Jer back in with me this week. It's week one of the NFL preseason, so we break down some of the biggest storylines that we found interesting from week one. And HBO's Hard Knocks is back on our TV screens. It's with the Cleveland Browns for 2018. So we're going to talk about some of the best stories from episode one, which was on this week in the US. And I think it's been on TV now in Ireland and the UK. So back to some NFL talk this week. Got Barry and Jer here with me, beside me. Let's get cracking with episode 37 of Paddy Pigskin. To appease my New England Patriot fan friends, I'm going with Rodney Harrison this week, safety, even though he couldn't make that play versus my boy David Tyree, but that's for another day. He was born in Markham, Illinois in 1972, played his high school ball at Chicago Heights High School, went on to play college football at Western Illinois from 1991 to 93, and is the school's record holder for career tackles, which was 345, and tackles in one game, which is 28. The San Diego Chargers selected him with the 145th pick in the fifth round of the 1994 NFL Draft. Played in the Super Bowl that year, but a loss to the 49ers at Super Bowl 29. In his 9 years in San Diego, he went to two Pro Bowls. He then landed with the New England Patriots in 2003 and will play 6 seasons there in New England. He was here when he won 2 Super Bowls at Super Bowl 38 and 39 against the Panthers and the Eagles, respectively. He also played in Super Bowl 42, which, of course, he lost to my New York Giants. Sorry, don't be salty. Have to bring it up. He is in the Chargers and Patriots 50th anniversary team. Stats-wise, he finished his career with 1,205 tackles, 30.5 sacks, and 34 interceptions. So, episode 37, safety Rodney Harrison. Let's get the lads on and get on with episode 37 of Paddy Pigskin. I mean handcuffs, time to man up, put my hands up. Fuck you saying, bruh, cause I'm a black man in the phantom. Or is it cause my windows tinted, car cost 300,000 and I blow endo in it? You mad cause your daughter fuck with me on spring break? Well, I'ma fuck her till spring break. Roll another one cause I'm winning, and my photo looking real photogenic. Gentleman attire in threads that won't expire. I'm in the class of my own, my teacher got fired. Money getting long, pussy rate keep rising. Versace outfit cost me 3,000. From the P houses, did it from the wee hours. Selling that chicken, no lemon pepper, no sweet and sour. First you get the power, then you get respect. I'm getting so much money. So I have Barry and Jer here with me. Morning, lads. How are you?
Doing well. It's a rainy day in Boston, but, you know, it's the weekend, so it's good.
I think this is the earliest episode we've ever recorded, because what is it? It's 10:30 in the morning here, Eastern Standard Time.
Pretty damn early.
And I will put out a disclaimer. I forgot our good microphone, so Jer is kindly in interview mode here. We've got the small little Paddy Pigskin mic that I take with me when we're on the road. That's our microphone for today.
I feel like Jeff Shreve's here. I think only our listeners over the pond may get that reference, but
he's Sky Sports legend. So if the sound is a little bit shitty this week, just deal with it, because this is what we got. And I'm not going to have the lads come all the way out here to Fenway Park and not record. So sometimes you got to improvise on the fly.
Yeah.
But yeah. Apart from that, everyone's doing all right, ready to go.
Yep.
We've no beers this week, so I guess we're just doing iced coffee reviews, are we? Jared's got Gatorade, so no beers. I mean, not that Irish guys need excuses to be drinking before fucking midday.
I was about to say, I was fully expecting a 10:30 a.m. beer with this. I'm very okay it's not happening, but yeah.
Right, last week we had, it was kind of Irish-American football, IAFL stuff. The next episode after this will also be Irish-American football. So we got to sandwich some NFL stuff in there. And we'll start with preseason. So it's been week one of the preseason. Don't really count the Hall of Fame game as week one. It's kind of a pre-preseason game. And that was between the Ravens and the Bears. We'll start with the number one overall pick, I suppose. We have to. Baker Mayfield against my Giants. 11 of 20, 212 yards. He had 2 touchdowns, First was to Antonio Galloway, and the second was to the tight end, David Njoku. Wasn't it? Or was it the other way around?
The other way around, but yeah.
Thomas Forson was to Galloway.
Njoku, and then the second one was Galloway on the slant, and then he just took it straight, yeah.
So, first impressions of Baker Mayfield, you impressed, yeah?
Well, you know, I was a Baker guy when he was coming out. I was impressed to see he actually looked comfortable in the pocket. Mm. You know, there was a couple of times, fair enough, he moved outside the pocket and threw it on the run, but by and large, you know, he stood in there, moved up, and was just putting the ball around, especially to the Antonio Callaway, and that went for, 60 or 70 yards, that little slanting up.
Yep.
And it's an interesting one because Tyrod played well as well, so it's not often you see the Browns, you know, who couldn't get a QB for 20 years, pretty much seem to have two good QBs. Now, bear in mind, it's week one.
Yeah, but the same point, I would say that, to your point, Jer, like, if there's one play anyone who's listening here wants to watch to, like, say, hey, you know, this is the argument for Baker Mayfield in the NFL about, hey, I want to be comfortable in the pocket and I can maintain there under duress. 3rd and 18, he's in the pocket, he's moving around, he steps into a very busy pocket, which if you're a rookie and you're afraid of contact, you're not going to do. Steps into it, throws on the guy with the deep end for 22 yards, gets the first down. That's a very mature throw to do for someone who's in his very first kind of game as a rookie. So it was cool to see. To your point, I think Tyrod looked very good. I think Baker looked very good. I think, again, Tyrod is going to be your starter, but I think that the Browns, if you're a Browns fan, you're very happy at what you saw from Baker in game one as far as what the future holds.
And he had another really good throw to Callaway down the sideline. Yes. Similar, he was flushed out of pocket. Yeah, he just showed a lot of good poise, and I tell you, he put zip on the ball. Like, he fucking zipped that, and in fairness to Callaway, he made a great catch, but that's like a pro. Like, you know, when Rodgers was flushed out of that pocket to make the throw to Jared Cook, like, it kind of reminded me in a way, he was in trouble, he had to throw across the field, that easily could have went out of bounds. He put it where only Callaway could catch it, and it was a fantastic throw and catch. I was like, you know, people are saying it's preseason, like he was playing against the second or third stringers, but he was probably also playing with his own second stringer. So yeah, that kind of equalizes or normalizes the data in one way or another. But yeah, to your point, very, very mature plays. Pocket awareness was very, very good. Yeah, and like, not calling the next Carson Wentz or the next franchise QB yet, but he did show signs there where, you know, if I was a Browns fan, I would be getting excited looking at some of the things he was doing.
Yeah, I will say that Jer and I are firmly on the Baker train here, and we're waiting for you to hop on the bandwagon here. I do think that, like, by midseason or whatever, and we can talk about these things later, but he is going to start at some point this year.
Yeah.
Especially because the Browns have a rough start to the year, like, for games that they're playing. But the reality is, like, I think it's a very different world where, like, and I'll make this very bold claim right now. I think the Browns win more games this year than the Bucks do. And this is partially really sad to admit because our schedule sucks and it sucks to say your team is going to be worse than the Browns. But I also, on the other end, just think that they might have something if the QB play can hold up.
Yeah. How many wins would you see them getting? I said 5 to 6 wins this year.
Yeah, I think
now, that's kind of like, I guess some people would say it's conservative when you look at the talent they have, but they, you know, you can have all the talent in the world, like, just to refer to the Giants last year, they actually had a lot of talent and they were still fucking 3-13. So on paper, you can be loaded with talent, but if you don't gel and mesh from the get-go, you still might lose a lot of games. So I would have them in the 5 to 6 range. Some people say playoff bound. What do you think, Barry?
I wouldn't go as far as playoff bound, but probably in the 7 to 8, like 6 to 7 to 8 range. Again, for them, that's a giant improvement. And we saw this entire thing in the Hard Knocks episode where, you know, Hugh Jackson is just like, you know, hey, can we just, you know, I want to do better than last year. And they literally went from 1 win to 0. So he had to jump in the lake. So, like, I think, again, they're going to do better than they did last year, which is, again, checking the box there. But I do think that they have a good year. And I think the Bucks stay pretty much at that 4 to 5 win, unfortunately.
What about you, Jer?
I can't really see past the 5 to 6 wins. You know, they could turn around and, as Gary said, that may seem conservative and sitting on the fence because of the talent they have. But you got to bear in mind, Josh Gordon isn't back yet. He's still going through his own things. Mm-hmm. Antonio Callaway is a first-round receiver that was drafted in the 4th round because of the issues he had in college. And he was just picked up on Sunday night as well. by the police with marijuana in the car. And although he said it wasn't his, who knows? Like, because he's in that phase one with the NFL, that isn't officially been said yet, but they could turn around and he could face a suspension now just for being around a drug like that.
Well, there was worse. He had a suspended license. And there was also bullets and fucking gun parts found in the car. Yeah. I mean, come on. Like, so, seriously.
Yeah,
it
sucks because, like, you saw in the game, the guy is just so talented, though. And so I watched him when he was at Florida, too, and he's just the same guy, which is if you give that guy an inch of space, he can beat most people down the field because he's just a burner.
Yeah, I didn't expect that. Once he caught that slant, I didn't expect the wheels to go like that there. So if he can stay on the field, Josh Gordon comes back and juices there, bless him.
That did start to annoy me a little bit after a while. We'll get into it later when we chat about our hard knocks.
But yeah, they could look good.
Okay, we'll stick with that game real quick because we'll talk about Saquon. He had that big run. Part of it was like he looks fucking fantastic, which that was a really good run. Like he had that stop start jump cut. Other part of it was like the right side of that offensive line gave him no fucking blocking there. That was all him. They were getting piled back in on top of him. He just made the play. So that was a little bit of a cause for concern, but also a cause for optimism because he essentially just made that play all on its own. And for a first rush play, really, awesome. That was pretty good. So, I mean, he has those quads that are the size of fucking tree trunks.
39-yard pickup. As you said, though, you know, I listened to some of like the radio reports of it, and they did it no justice. Like he sat there like Le'Veon Bell, watched the gap, burst through it, broke three tackles, and finally got put out. Now, again, his next three carries, he was stuffed, and then they took him off the field. But that's all you want. You just want him to give it in there. Yeah. His first run, 39-yard run, you couldn't ask for a better start. So we'll see what happens in game two with him. But
huge for his confidence as well. And like, he knows he can do it against, you know, NFL pro.
And you have to think with that, OBJ wasn't on the field, so nobody was, like, threatened of Odell burning them down the sideline, so they knew. Yeah. The ball was going to come to Saquon more than likely.
True. Okay, we'll move on to Shaquem Griffin. So we all know his story now. Plays with a hand missing. He was drafted in the fifth round by the Seahawks. Just happened to be, we were very lucky, myself and our friend Brian Carter, just happened to be backstage when he was called back to the arena because he was in the hotel. I guess he was getting a little bit downhearted, which is fair enough. And we were lucky that we got to see him go up onto the stage with his family and his brother and all that. He led the Seahawks the other night against the Indianapolis Colts. He had 9 total tackles. 6 of them were solo with 1 tackle for loss. But Pro Football Focus weren't overly impressed. They said he got blocked very easily on run plays and he missed his gap sometimes. So I guess his stats paint a really good picture in that he led the team in tackles. But, you know, Pro Football Focus are very analytical, as we know. So they were kind of, they gave him a mixed review. So did you guys see his highlights or did you see that game?
Yeah, so I think it was a hard thing where, like, I think being a linebacker or being in that kind of a set, I know that it's so important with a lot of the things you do, but I think that being someone who a team can rally around on a defense is more important in a lot of regards than what maybe certain things will say about how easily you can get blocked by runs and things like that. Because in the most frank sense, as he adds muscle, as he gets stronger, as he gets more reps in the NFL, you expect those things to improve. But I think what I saw very quickly when I was watching is that a lot of the guys in the defense really rallied around his effort. Like when they saw that guy, and like, this is not to make it sound a bad way, but when you're that guy in defense with him, either you really support him and you see him do a big play and you're like, oh, that's my guy. Or even in the bad sense, if he makes a play and you're like, this guy has one hand and he's making more plays than I do, makes you try harder.
Absolutely.
To a point where, like, I saw there was a definite raise in intensity when he was on the field for how much the defense was trying to move around, the effort they were putting in. And that kind of stuff, while it's maybe not in the perfect analytical sense, is equally, if not more, important there as well.
Okay. Sure.
I didn't really see much of the highlights. I only seen, like, 3 or 4 of his tackles. And I suppose this was one of the things that, I suppose, seasoned veterans or ex-NFL players that are now in the media game are talking about. It's all great, him like running in and making the tackle, but what happens when he's got a 300-pound lineman coming to block him and he's only got the one hand to try and fend it away is where he could struggle. And again, fair play to Pro Football Focus for those stats because I didn't watch the game, so it will be interesting to see because he's in a division where there's going to be a lot of big run games, especially against the Rams, the Cardinals. So, yeah, I want to see the guy do well, and I hope he gets the pack on the muscle, because when you see him with his brother, like, they pretty much look nearly physically the same, and one of them's a linebacker and the other is a cornerback.
Mm.
So, yeah, I'm pulling for the guy. It's one of those feel-good stories. And
They're Irish twins, aren't they? There's only like a year between them, the two brothers.
No.
Is that a real term, Irish twins?
Yeah, but it's supposed to be within, like, I can't remember what the cutoff is. They're not a year apart.
No, I thought they were actual twins at the same
time.
They
are,
one of them was held back.
Oh, well, then either way, they're twins. They're either real twins or Irish twins. But yeah, no, best luck to him going forward. Like, obviously, his story is fantastic. To see a guy overcome that sort of shit, like, you know, like the way he was able to really come on at Central Florida. Mm-hmm. And now he's doing the same, hopefully, for the Seahawks and build our defense again.
I know. I think that we're going to see in time that he might, like, fit himself into, like, kind of a Mark Barron, like, hybrid safety linebacker role that he did with the Rams, in the sense that, like, he's probably too small to be a linebacker, but maybe not, like, the right size you want for a safety, where he'll fit in and just kind of be, like, your general kind of, like, ball hawk playmaker. But again, I think as long as he's putting in the effort, has the speed, which is, as we know, just a very huge selling point for him, is just how quick he really is. I think the more you can separate him from that line of the lineman is going to come and try to block him, the more I think you play to his strengths by letting him play in open field.
And Jared just pulled it up there that they actually are twins. They were born 2 minutes apart. So not Irish twins, but actual genetic twins. And we have some beef already. We've got some preseason beef going on. Never thought I'd say we have preseason fucking beef going on. Cam Newton and Kelvin Benjamin. Benjamin came out with some interesting comments there during the week on Cam Newton. I'll read him out. He said he could have been more successful had he have been drafted by somebody else. And Carolina was a bad fit from the get-go. And he also said that if he was put with any other QB, like Big Ben, Aaron Rodgers, or interesting enough, Eli Manning, quarterbacks with knowledge that know how to place the ball, he would have been more successful. And as luck would have it, the Panthers were in Buffalo for week one. So it was almost like they were selling a fucking pay-per-view fight there, the way they all of a sudden were playing each other in week one. Cam started squaring up to Kelvin Benjamin. I think Thomas Davis was hanging around as well. It looked like Cam just wanted to have a chat with him and was like, you know, what have you got to say? Say it to me face. Kelvin, I don't know, he was laughing. I don't think he really wanted a part of it. So do you reckon there's genuine dislike between these guys now? I can understand Cam Newton. You know, like, Kelvin Benjamin's getting the ball thrown to him from Peterman right now, like AJ McCarron and their draft pick,
Josh Allen,
who didn't really look great the other night.
No.
So I think what he's saying is almost the QBs that I have now are better than Cam Newton. Like, what the fuck is he trying to say?
I don't know if he's necessarily trying to say that Nathan Peterman is going to be a better QB for him than Cam Newton. I think the argument there isn't necessarily about Cam Newton, but more so about the play calling. Is it just playing the same division as the Panthers? Like, I watch them a decent amount, and what they do is it's a methodical running team. We want to pound the ball down. We're going to do Cam Newton on play actions, rollouts, things like that. We're not a vertical spread the ball down the field. If they did that, they were throwing it to Ted Ginn usually for most years. They're just saying, hey, you can run fast.
That's true, but they did trade Kelvin Benjamin last year saying we wanted to get faster.
So what does that
comment mean?
I mean, I don't think that Kelvin Benjamin was ever supposed to be your burner down the field, but at the same point, like, I don't know any team that wouldn't want to have a 6'5 strong possession receiver. So, like, either there is some internal beef where he's saying, hey, give me the ball more, and they're saying we want to have guys who are just cool with playing their role, which is one argument, in which case I also get Kelvin's annoyance there. Or you just say, hey, we want to start making this a more vertical offense. Let's just have guys who are all burners, which is a different part there, which is why you bring in DJ Moore, which is why you have these guys now, and you're saying we're going to just spread out the ball more. I don't really believe that they're going to that, like, far end of the spectrum of we're going to start just airing it out like we're the Green Bay Packers. But I do think that it was probably one of those situations where time had just taken its toll and they both probably wanted a bit of separation from each other.
So you often see this when a player gets traded from a team that he wasn't expecting to be traded from, that their attitude is a bit different. Right. Now, I get where he's coming from, because if you are a receiver and you have a bad QB, they can ruin your career. And, you know, I don't really... Cam, I'm not so much a fan of, right? Mm-hmm. Like, He's only completing in the 50s, like, percentage on average of his career with his passes. His mechanics, you hear from ex-QBs, they aren't great from the way he stands there and throws it. And his running ability from their bootlegs and everything masks a lot of the deficiencies where he can break off and shed linebackers himself. So if you are a receiver, he's not the kind of QB you want throwing to you, because if he doesn't like it, he's going to take off and run. And Gary and Barry as receivers, there's probably nothing worse if you get open in open space and the QB doesn't throw it to you and you're busting 40 yards down the field. But
you just throw your hands in the air, yeah, and what happened, yes.
But in that confrontation, though, I think Cam just wanted a simple talk and tried to shake his hand.
Yeah.
Benjamin was having none of it. But at the same time, Benjamin, you've been injured. You couldn't lay off the pies, you know? So you weren't burning anybody. Although the touchdown he got the other night, though, when I looked at it, it was literally looked like it was in slow motion the way he was running past this cornerback.
Yeah.
But again, as Barry said, 6'5", 218, 20-pound receiver, who wouldn't want one of them?
Jumps high, can get the ball. Like, it just, yeah.
And to bring it back to the QBs he's got now, like, he's not really gone to anything better. But if Josh Allen had some good things, like he electrified the crowd. Yeah. So that when he touched the field the other night, when he came on, that was the highest television rating all summer in Western New York.
Wow.
When that he touched the field.
That's amazing.
Everybody tuned in to watch it. I didn't see many of his stats, but I knew he had a couple of deep throws that just fell, like the players didn't catch them or something.
Yeah.
But if he can just sit behind Peterman and McCarron and learn some things the way Baker is doing with Tyrod,
yep.
I think for years to come, he'll be a great QB. But what he's got, what Cam doesn't have, he's got the tangibles to throw the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Cam's just, you get Cam on a good day, he's amazing, but most of the days he's just average.
Well, and you know that they're going to be structuring an offense whenever it is the Josh Allen time there that is going to be very vertical, which is going to play to Kelvin Benjamin's strength there.
And who, they got Corey Coleman now, didn't they, as well?
Yeah.
They just brought him in, so.
Look, I'll go up the stats here. He
could catch jack shit the other day, but.
Josh Allen, 9 for 19, 116 yards, and he had that touchdown. So not bad.
And there was two bombs down the field that just weren't caught that could have just put those stats out of the stratosphere.
In fairness to Peterman, he went 9 for 10, 119 yards. He did have a TD and an install, so.
And the end was the last throw, though. He started 9 for 9 and just rifled everything.
Right, we'll move away from beef. ACL injuries. So last year, Jerry, we spoke about this same topic again. We'll touch on it briefly. You had a load of really good stats last year. Redskins, they lost two players in one game versus the Pats to torn ACLs. They lost their rookie running back, Darius Geis. They also lost their backup tight end, I think is Manasseh Garner. They also had three other players injured the other night. One of their offensive linemen got rolled up on. They were testing his ACL. I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. The Chargers have lost two tight ends. They obviously lost Hunter Henry in OTAs and their rookie Austin Roberts. The Colts, I think it was just reported there last night or this morning, Deion Kane. I think we're up to about 15 ACL tears already before the season starts. And I pulled out a stat over the past 5 years, there's been an average of 23 ACL tears before week one of the regular season. What the fuck is going on, like? Do we have an explanation, or is it just the game has moved so fast, like guys are cutting with such speed that they haven't before, and just the ACL, like all the ligaments in the knee, cruciate and collaterals are just not designed to take that punishment?
Yeah, I mean, I struggle with this because basketball has actually ran into a very similar issue, which is you could argue the game has never been played on a more athletic level than it is currently. To a point where, I think it's your point. It's like you're adding mass. You're getting guys who are bigger than they have been before for their positions. Wide receivers are more jacked than they've been in years. Like compared to the 1980s when you could have these guys running around, but they're not running at that speed. So you're having guys who have more mass in their body trying to be running faster than they run before and putting more strain on it by cutting harder and faster than they have before. And I'm sure there may be other explanations for it, but to me it kind of boils down to that, which is they're just putting more stress on their body with today's NFL than they ever have been. Like, guys like a Jarvis Landry, when you're a corner who have to be covering that, and you saw it in Hard Knocks, just how many times he cuts quick and does different things. Like, the strain he puts on his body and the strain he puts on the guy who has to cover him, like, neither side of that is ever used to that, 20 years ago.
Yeah, and again, just from some of the other media personalities, like Chris Sims, who his dad, Phil Sims, is a Giants legend. He was around all these teams growing up, and he said the training that they do now would not have been done back then. So you got to look to a lot of these conditioning coaches and what they're telling the head coaches. Yeah, this player can go through this exercise. And I think they train more nowadays than they did back then.
Yeah.
They took longer breaks back then. They weren't going as crazy in the weight room. But as you said, the basketball, like if you're expecting guys to stop, start, and go over on the knees, you don't see the injuries to the extent that's going on in the NFL.
No. Yeah, I think that's where the mass argument comes into play. It's like basketball, you're talking about guys who are not like generally like super bulky or big for their size. I think that's where football is the hard combo, is that you need to be unbelievably fast and athletic, but also have enough mass where you can take contact. And that's a really hard combo on joints.
And that's where I've heard a lot of arguments, because you got two players from the Washington Redskins that blew their ACL on the team playing on turf. Mm-hmm. Whereas if this was grass, grass may have given away and their knees would have been perfect. But I did hear a report come out of LSU confirming that he also hyperextended his leg while he was there. And I don't know if it was ever reported to the Patriots or the Redskins before they drafted him. So,
even though the game has evolved, on the plus side, science and medicine have evolved, because now the turnaround time for an ACL tear is like in the 6 to 9 months, whereas before it was probably 12 months or more, you know. Career ender. So, you know, that is one positive to take away, is that we're getting better at medicine and that we can get these guys back onto the field quicker. Are we ready to talk about some Hard Knocks?
Yeah. Can I ask about one thing before? Yeah. Which is, so you mentioned a lot of the rookies. What did you guys think of Sam Darnold? Did you guys see him play with the Jets?
Didn't see his highlight.
Seen a touchdown he threw last night. He moved out of the pocket and threw it into the corner.
Yeah. No, so he looked very comfortable and very much took that team by storm from what it looked like. If there's one rookie QB, because there's so many drafted, there's five who were drafted in the first round. If I had to put my money on any of them starting week one, I think the only one who's going to be starting is Sam Darnold. I think he looked super confident. And it's the one thing that I keep wanting to, like, and we'll talk about this many times as the season goes on, Gary, but it's just like, I can't help but see how he looks and just think about how the Giants would be if Darnold over Saquon. And, like, I know that, like, that's a good with good. Like, you're not, like, I don't think Saquon is going to be a bad pick or anything like that. But it does make me think, like, the better he looks, especially being in the same city, it's going to be just an interesting conversation.
It'll always be the Saquon versus Darnold. If Darnold turns out to be a Hall of Famer, you can't replace a QB or running back, you know. But the feel-good part of that game last night, it was nice to see Teddy Two Gloves back.
It was so good to see Bridgewater there.
Chatting about Griffin having a feel-good story, it was nice to see Bridgewater back out in the field, comfortable. He threw a touchdown as well, didn't he?
Yep.
So, although it was Isaiah Crowell, the running back that got in. I looked as he went into the end zone. There was about five fucking defenders came straight in head first on him. So I didn't know how there was any flags not throwing for that play.
Yeah, I don't think the refs know what to be doing with that penalty yet.
That's annoying. Yeah, we could do a whole other episode about the whole targeting rule. We'll move on to some Hard Knocks chat. You gotta love that music. It just gets you all fucking fired up, doesn't it, when you hear that Hard Knocks episode start?
Something about it that gets the goosebumps going, you know, and you're like, right, back to business.
Well, it's just the anticipation that, like, the football season is just, like, almost here, which is, like, yeah, preseason's fun and we're talking about all this, but we want week one. We want this season to start. We want to start seeing what the teams are looking like.
So this year, HBO cameras are in Cleveland with the Browns, obviously their number one draft pick, Baker Mayfield. And in the first episode, we saw him signing his rookie contract, which was worth $32.68 million, fully guaranteed. And it was funny, they were going through the contract, and he's like, what's all this crazy shit, like some of the stuff he wasn't allowed to do? Like, you can't go skydiving, like you can't go bungee jumping. But I would imagine that's like a staple in most contracts for guys that are drafted that high, right?
I loved how his agent was saying, you can do all these things, just don't get injured. And I was like, that's such bad advice, just tell him don't do it.
It was kind of obvious that they were going to, you know, pick a team that had a fairly big story attached to it. And someone like, you know, the Browns, who are getting this, what many believe to be finally their franchise quarterback, it kind of made sense that the cameras were going to be there to follow it around. So yeah, we'll go through some of the main talking points in the first episode. Landry, a.k.a. Mr. fucking bless him, that he's saying every 2 minutes. He got proper fired up there in the wide receiver meeting room. He, as he should, because, you know, now Coleman has gone to the Bills. Gordon is away from the team. Callaway, as we spoke about earlier, showing character concerns, and he was fucking lashing the receivers out of it because, you know, some of them weren't on the field practicing when they weren't really injured or sick or anything like that. And he dropped the F-bomb, I'd say, at least 10 times. He was ripping into him. And as he should, like, he led the league, I believe, last year in receptions. And he's not going to fucking Cleveland just to take part. He obviously would have gotten a lot of money from many teams, would have been willing to offer him a shitload of money. And he felt like they're building something here in Cleveland. And then I guess when he sees that kind of lack of effort from lads on the sideline at practice, he feels pissed off.
It's one of those things, right? Because when you think of receivers, nobody ever puts Jarvis Landry at the top five receivers level in the NFL. And rightfully so, there's some awesome receivers there. And Bernard, he came from Miami, you know. It's not as if it's a massive football team there. But the one thing he probably knows to where he's gotten in his career is work. And standing there watching receivers, not trying, I think it was... Is it Todd Haley, one of the ex-Steelers coaches, that was losing his shit at these people just standing around? And he's coming from an organization that knows how to win. And you just got to get rid of these ghosts that are hanging around where it was okay to not be fucking training and just standing there doing things. That's what got you to a 1-15. That's what got you to an 0-16. And again, some of these guys are saying, who the fuck are you probably to come in here and start shouting like this here? You only came here because we gave you so much money. But at the same time, the guy just didn't come here for the money. It's part of it, obviously, but he wants to win. He doesn't want to be in an 0-16 team.
Absolutely not.
No one wants to be. And I think, like, this is the reality. Is like, you need these guys who are going to be there to, like, preach the right kind of character, what you need. You worry, just like with anyone else, he's going to be this guy who's going to, on week one, stand up and cuss out the team. That, like, you want that to be received the right way and not create, like, friction within the organization. Again, I think it's the classic, like, let's see how this thing develops, but it can't be seen as a bad thing for right now, especially.
Yeah, you want that veteran leadership in the room that's willing to call guys out and blast them, and, you know, I'd have no problem with it. Like, you know, being a wide receiver myself and being, like, a coach and kind of a more senior player in a way, watching rookies come in, and, you know, you got to have them out there working or they're not going to progress and grow as a player. Hugh Jackson had a rough week. His mother died last week there in LA. She was 83. She had an illness. But what I didn't know was that he also lost his brother John only two weeks before that. So he's had two, like, you know, very, very close members of his family passing away in 2 weeks. Like, that's a lot for one person to go through. But Jesus, when you have the high pressure environment of being a head coach in the NFL, that's looking to turn the team around. But what I found fascinating was he was with his coaches. And, you know, they were offering their condolences, and he was talking about his mom real quick. I think he may have shed a tear or two. And then in the same breath, he's like, all right, let's start diving into, like, zone coverage concepts. So I was like, holy shit. It just kind of shows you the level of focus and, like, commitment to the game of football that these guys can have, that they're able to just, like, kind of flip off from that almost straight away and go back into what his job is. Well, or maybe is that his coping mechanism?
I don't know. That is one of the things where he was... It looked like he was trying not to acknowledge it, and he's coming from the 1-15 season. The Hard Knocks cameras were there. I know for a fact probably 31 other coaches in the NFL probably would have left the team to go be with their mother or be with the sister, because she was the only one that was left that was watching the mother. But you've seen what happened when John Dorsey in the front office came in, where they were like, yo, we're hugging this shit out. You know, they were not like, hey, we're going into, is that an inside run thing? You know, they just, no, we're hugging this one out. And you could see then, like, the players' meetings and everything, like, he was trying to keep everything contained. I just think he wasn't letting it out at all.
Yeah, no, it definitely came out that way to me as well, which is, like, you almost try to, like, dive yourself into, like, your job in that sense to, like, not have to acknowledge in the moment. And, look, I mean, this is... All it made me feel is that, like, if the Browns do succeed this year, there's probably no one I'll be happier for than Hugh Jackson, in the sense that, like, you come in, and from all accounts, he seems like a genuinely good dude from what I've heard from just a lot of his stints. Players have always liked him. They've liked him in Oakland. They've liked him in other places. And it's just, he seems like a guy who could just use a break in that sense. You know what I mean? So, like, if there's success there, I'm sure that'd be great. But at the same point, like, at some point this year, or whether it's the offseason or something like that, there's going to be some time where he will need to cope.
Yeah, and we every year we always have some of our buddies on the Dublin Rebels. We call it a white fan favourite. So you always got this white player that everybody, like, he may not make the team, probably won't, but he always kind of stands out and, like, he uses his camera time. This year, for me, it's fourth string quarterback. A star has emerged in Brogan Roback.
It was amazing.
So he's basically, like, he's almost, like, personal fucking chef, personal, like, grocery shopper for all the other QBs, because we knew that the quarterbacks all had this RV camper van that was parked out. And it literally was just parked in the fucking parking lot of the Browns training
that
facility.
Or Baker was like, most rookies have to go out and, you know, buy their O-line dinner or something. I had to buy an RV.
And it shows Roback, like, stocking up the fridge, and he has all these snacks, and he's like, yeah, I went to the nutritionist to get all the good stuff. But Jesus, Drew Stanton gave him a bit of a hard time. He was like, this looks like a fucking frat house fridge. There's like two cans of Diet Coke and a bottle of water in here. Give the guy a break.
I think even one of the coaches was saying it as well. I was like, hold on, he just came from your nutritionist, so I'd be blaming your nutritionist.
To be fair,
anything.
I think he asked the nutritionist for the snacks. I don't think that he asked you for the diet.
True.
Yeah,
that'd
yeah,
be a very
true.
Bad nutritionist.
Yeah. But I do kind of like that Baker Mayfield is coming in there, and he has their little, obviously they have their QB meeting room where they're with the QB coach, but I like that, the way he's stepping up, and he's like, look, you know, when we have our downtime and we still want to talk about football and kind of maybe go through some game tape or whatever, they have their own private little area that they can get shit done. I think that's pretty cool, I have to say.
Yeah, he definitely didn't feel entitled, which is the big thing I think we had talked about a lot about him in college, is like whether he, and I know that like the story would imply that that's not going to be the case, but, you know, does he feel like, you know, oh, I'm just going to be the starter eventually or things like that? I think he said all the right things in this episode. I think he did the right things, which when there's cameras on you all the time, I think is a pretty fair indication of like the fair mindset you have there. But I think like what he said was really interesting, which was like, I'm never going to have a mindset that I'm going to be the backup quarterback, because the second I've done that, I've stopped trying to learn, which I'm like, that's the perfect perspective you want from a guy like that, which is, hey, I'm coming in, I know that I still have work to do, which is, after a number one pick, pretty much all you can ask the guy to have for a mindset, right?
Yeah. We'll finish on interest rates. So you wanted to talk about, is his defensive lineman was talking about interest rates.
Yep.
Some of the players hadn't got a fucking clue what he was talking about.
Okay, so Carl Nassib is talking about the idea of compound interest, which basically for any of the listeners is just, if you put in some money and it has a certain amount of interest rate, after a certain amount of time, it will accumulate to a higher multiple than what you initially invested. So the example he had given was that if you invested in something that had a 10% interest rate for 7 years, that for every dollar you invested, it would be worth about $1.95 in 7 years. So he was trying to make this example about how if you invest your money and you do this the right way, how you can make, after 42 years, so six cycles of doubling, 64 times what you make, which is great. And he's trying to tell people about how you can become billionaires and all these different things. So I want to dissect this just a little bit, just because there are certain parts of it where I was like, I don't necessarily agree with this.
Is this your MBA from MIT coming out here now or what?
It's a little bit, and also just the fact that I actually work at a financial investment company to a point where this is basically what
we are.
This is kind of what we do. So the couple different things. So first of all, the math of it is correct, but the interest rate is absurd.
Yeah, was he said 10%?
He was saying 10%. So just so people know, so market inflation typically is about 2%. So beating it usually means you get like 3-5%. So you get, you know, you do just a little bit better than the market. This is also assuming that every single year you get 10% returns, which means if the economy crashes, you're still doing great. If the economy is rising, you're still doing great. So ignoring those parts. Let's just dissect for a second what happens if you got a 5% instead of a 10%, just to show maybe why he's a little bit overstating. So he said in 7 years with 10%, you get about 2x, right?
Yeah.
So if I do this for 5%, it's actually about 1.4. So it's a lot less. So now for the real terms of this, in 42 years, instead of being 64 times what you would get, it's actually only 7 times what you would get. So you're just shortchanging your teammates by about 8x there already. And that's 5%, which is a great return. Typically, it's about 3%. So you barely just beat the market. There's some bad years, things like that. If that's the case and it's just 3%, what actually ends up happening is after the 42 years you talked about, it's only about 3x.
So again, you're going from 64X to 3X. I think it's great. I think you're teaching your teammates about investing early, investing often, and I think it's a smart idea. But I think you are severely overstating the amount of what these guys can really make by a factor of about 20.
Let's which, be honest, these guys are going to be like, most of them are going to be bankrupt within, what's the stats say, like that 70% of them or something?
It's
bankrupt within 10 years of leaving the league, if not 5 years or something like that.
It's an absolute terrible. No, and this thing, like I'm criticizing the idea of like the math of it, just because like how you with the science, like when it comes to the areas where we can relate, where like I have a problem here.
Sure. Yeah.
I agree with the motive. I agree with the right idea of this, and I agree with the message, which is invest early and often for these guys, so you can have more than what you think you will later in life when you need to be spending it, and so you don't actually have to take more than you have and become broke, like the trend has been in the past.
This is definitely the most educational episode we've had since the TB12 methods. So we've covered science, nutrition, and now we cover finances. So if anybody wants a financial advisor, hit up Barry on Twitter or something. I'm sure he'd be able to help you out a little bit better than NASA would.
At BD Brudney, accepting any nudes or commentary.
Right, we'll leave it at that. Jer had to step out there. So we'll give our real quick, we'll give a weekly review. Since we're not reviewing beers today because it's too fucking early, what would you give out of 10 for the first episode of Hard Knocks?
I'll give it like an 8.5. I think that there are a lot of characters on the team. I think they picked the right team for sure. I want to see more of, I'm blanking at his name, the first round pick from last year. Number
Miles
one.
Garrett.
Yeah, I want to see more of Miles Garrett.
Yeah.
I heard in the back, he's like the deepest voice.
All we saw was him eating food in the fucking meeting room.
But I want to know more about him. Because I think, like, especially last year, he was missing part of the year. We didn't get to see him there.
Yeah.
And he came back. He had a great rest of the year. But, like, you know, you want to hear about that. Because while Baker is the emerging leader on offense, like, you imagine Miles is that leader on defense, or should be with the number one overall pick. So I want to know more about that. And I'm sure they have that planned. And I'm excited to see the Coleman trade and all the different things that happen there. But it definitely makes me like realize as I'm looking around that team just how much talent there really is.
For that reason exactly, I'm going to give it like an 8.2. I really enjoyed it. The fact that it's back is fantastic. But yeah, I did want to see a bit more of Miles Garrett instead of just eating a fucking lunchbox full of food in the meeting room, which basically that was the only kind of thing you saw him doing. For that reason, I'm going to give it an 8.2. So an average of what, 8.35? Not bad for the first
episode. Some pretty good math there, Patty.
Maybe we can get Jer can text us what his review is and we can stick it in. I think we'll leave it at that for this week, Barry. In absence of Jer, we'll say thanks very much, Jer. And Barry, thanks very much for coming on. We're going to have some really good news to announce in the next few weeks, both in regards to fantasy football and live podcasts. So make sure you tune into our social media pages, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook especially. That's where we're going to do some live episodes. You can catch everything there. And wherever you're listening to us, on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, we appreciate the support. So thanks very much for tuning into episode 37 of Paddy Pigskin. Tune in next week where, as always, we will have less slant and more slanching. Take care. In the jungle in these new Kanye's. Ale Bumbaye. Ale Bumbaye. My lawyer threw them gloves on and beat another case. Fuck y'all mad at me, folks. My belt got 2 G's on it. Her bag got 2 C's on it. My daughter stroller got D's on it. Whoa. Free Big Meech, free Boosie and see murder. Like New Orleans, like Baltimore. Come to Compton, you'll see murders. And my ARC murders. That's beef, nigga, no problem. I'm insane and you Usain, nigga better turn on them burners. Got coke swimming in that glass jar, bitch go turn on them burners. Got dope to sell in this hotel, no half price, no retail. You a bitch nigga, no female, I smack niggas freeware. I'm on the block like D12, I got the white, no D12. Like a little nigga in Africa, I was born toting that K. And that's real shit, no Will Smith and no known the gay. But they yelling, Ale Bumbaye, Ale Bumbaye. Thank God that the nigga seen another day. Ale Bumbaye, Ale Bumbaye. Got a chopper and a bottle, fucking let him spray.
I take my case to trial, hire the dream team. Robbie Kardashian, Johnny Cochran, I seen things. I dream big, I think sharp. Inhale smoke, Hawaiian tree bark. Humble yourself, you not a G, keep it one with yourself. Running niggas for help, favors, I keep one on the shelf. I got rifles with lasers, swing it just like the majors. Hit you right above navel, now you swimming in pavement. Gold medals on my neck, I call it Michael Phelps. Wholesaling for less, I call them bottom shelf. Niggas tough on them blogs and never did nothing at all. On the road to the riches, bitches not tagging along. Bless my ass in the thong, hit that ass and I'm gone. Disrespect my nigga boss and I'm flashing the chrome. I'm waving the tech, titty spraying the Mac. Extend those in the back on the lap. I got a bitch that look like Layla Ali sitting in my lap. Got a car from skateboard, pick him up and lax. Speaking skateboards, where tune at? Fuck with him, I break a skateboard on the nigga back. 2 Chainz.
Skateboard on a nigga track. No lie, no lie, already got a plaque. Mama got a house, daughter got accounts. Just to think a nigga like me started with an ounce. Bad bitches and deep boys, we bring them out. If them niggas pussy, we dush them, we clean them out. This the voice of ghetto intelligence. If you got work, go to work, don't work at your residence.
For presidents, work to Muhammad, that triple beam is heaven sent. Riding through the jungles in that motherfucking elephant. That's a great ghost, great ghost. With them ears on it, swimming through the hood like it got fins on it.
Tell me.
You know I got that work on the farming grill. Waiting motherfuckers in, made another meal. Got a nigga feeling like Cassius Clay. Thriller and Manila, nigga want it, whoop his ass today. Ale Bumbaye, Ale Bumbaye. Thank God that a nigga seen another day. Ale Bumbaye, Ale Bumbaye. Got a chopper and a bottle, fucking let him spray.